welcome back to another episode of Hanks for the Memories, your favorite podcast, probably. For the listener at home, redid that intro, felt great about it. wanted to go back to that catchphrase, which is going to stick from now on. this week's episode, we're talking You've Got Mail. My guest this week is staff writer for The Millions, co-host of The Book Report Show.
Mm-hmm.
Got it right.
The Book Report.
Contributor to The Reader, the Chicago Reader.
Chicago Magazine, The All, Men's Journal.
Oh, that's a new one. I haven't read that one yet.
It's brand new.
It's Janet Potter. Hello, Janet.
Oh, hi, Adam.
let's first get into why I thought you'd be a great guest for this episode. First, because you're an amazing writer and pop culture aficionado.
Thank you. Correct.
Yes, I'm glad you agreed with me. It would be really awkward if you didn't. But also, you are clearly very involved in the book world.
Mm-hmm.
And also, once upon a time, a small bookstore employee.
Yes, I worked in independent bookstores from 2001 to 2010. I worked in 8 different bookstores, with varying degrees of similarity to the shop around the corner depicted in You've Got Mail.
The one that I knew that I visited, not very much like that.
You know, well, yeah, I mean, we can dive right into that. The bookstore in this movie is an extremely unrealistic portrait of a bookstore.
You never were just chatting with Billy Zane. Not Billy Zane, Steve Zahn.
Steve Zahn.
Interchangeable, right?
I love it.
Imagine Billy Zane in this movie instead of Steve Zahn.
I would love to. Yeah, I mean, this bookstore and it's funny because, like, I started working in bookstores in 2001, which was 3 years after this movie came out. So people still brought it up in the bookstore. You know, they'd come in and be like, oh, this reminds me so much of You've Got Mail. And I have a friend who's a children's book buyer, and she worked at a children's bookstore in Dartmouth, New Hampshire, when this movie came out. And so she, like, hates this movie. Because she's also, like, very bubbly and sweet and knows everything about children's literature. And so, like, 5 times a day, she would get people be like, oh my gosh, have you seen You've Got Mail? You remind me so. And she was like, she hates it. Because, I mean, the bookstore in this movie is smaller than my apartment. Has 4 employees.
No need to brag, Janet.
It's smaller than a typical one-bedroom apartment. Has 4 employees who seem to be full-time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the one girl mentions being in school.
Having a test.
Having a paper, but she, like, they're all there all the time. They're never doing anything except standing around. There are no books on display anywhere in the store that have been published in the last 30 years. Everything you see faced out is The Wizard of Oz and Eloise and William Steig and Babar. And it's just like, this movie took place during the Harry Potter age. Like, this store would go out of business no matter what else was happening in the neighborhood. And they're selling, like, super expensive used books out of wood hutches. Like, give me a break.
And also snotty when Tom Hanks, Joe Fox, wasn't ready to plop down the cash for whatever that hand-illustrated book
was. Yeah, hand-tipped. The illustrations are hand-tipped.
What does that mean?
I have no idea.
I thought you were ready to teach me what
no,
that
but meant. It's because that's what Steve Zahn says. He said, mm-hmm, the illustrations are hand-tipped. And Tom Hanks says, that's why it costs so much. And Steve Zahn says, that's why it's worth so much.
The crux of their entire argument between the two bookstores, right there,
right
in one little moment.
Right. I actually, those one
Efrons.
Of the most, one of the most realistic moments of the bookstore sections of this movie, which I totally felt for, is when they're ringing up Tom Hanks's purchases, and Steve Zahn says, you know, 72/31, and Tom Hanks goes, really? And he's like, yeah. And I've said that so many times. You're like, yeah. Like, they're all full price. Yeah. And so, yeah, I've been Steve Zahn in that moment 1,000 times.
Have you been Meg Ryan?
You know, people used to be like, you remind me so much of that girl from You've Got Mail. And I'd be like, oh my gosh. Then you'd be like, you know, the one with brown hair who speaks in a monotone. And I'd be like,
oh no.
Great. Thanks. I thought you were talking about Meg Ryan. But you were not. But I sort of feel like, you know, like the movie Inside Out, like all the characters are different feelings in the little girl's brain. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like the staff of the shop around the corner is like my Inside Out. Like, they all exist in my head in different ways. And I've behaved like each of them as a bookstore employee at different times.
Including Birdie.
Including Birdie, the crazy old lady.
Yeah, from All in the Family.
Right. Yeah. But this was also like, this book annoyed, or this movie, excuse me, I just really like books. This movie annoyed bookstore employees a lot because her bookstore has been there for 42 years. A chain bookstore moves in around the corner in Manhattan. Like, this is not in a small town where there's
it's not like they've never had any competition before.
There's only 50 customers to go around. Like, you're in Manhattan. A bookstore moves in around the corner and they are out of business in less than 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of what people thought was going to happen to everybody, you know? And like, I worked at a bookstore in Boston and there was a Barnes & Noble 3 blocks away and people would come in all the time and be like, I can't believe you guys are still in business. Like, oh my God, blah, blah. It's like, You've Got Mail is not nonfiction. Like, that's not how it works. And also, why doesn't Meg Ryan have savings? Like, why doesn't she have a line of credit?
Especially
like,
if it's a store that's survived multiple generations in Manhattan, you'd think it would be...
Like, is she still renting? What's going on? So that whole side of it makes no sense. Like, a lot of independent bookstores closed in the 90s, but not like that. And there's a line in the movie where they said their sales were down $1,200 from the previous year, which is marginal.
Again, Janet, need to brag.
Like, that's not significant. And whatever. It's all wrong.
But before we dig into their books and start to like analyze.
I have problems with their inventory selection, mm-hmm, the fact that they mm-hmm. give out cloth bags. Like, this.
Yeah, I did a double take at that. Giving mm-hmm. out cloth bags, I hope that was calculated into a $78 total.
I hope so too. Yeah.
If not, and that's a big mistake.
That's actually what I thought. Like, I've worked at stores where if you spend more than $50, you get a canvas bag, or like $100 during the holidays. But yeah. Kathleen Kelly. Bookstore owner.
Birdie was trying to help, but she just needed you there as the fifth employee to really straighten that ship.
Maybe they shouldn't have had the like crazy old lady running the books, you know?
That could have been the only problem they had in the long run. They were doing totally fine, they just didn't know it.
Yeah.
let's circle back for a second, because this is Hanks for the memories, not mm-hmm. bookstores for the book memories.
Janet's manifesto on how to run a bookstore in Manhattan.
So what is your personal opinion of Tom Hanks? If you had to sum it up in like a one sentence burst, what would you say?
A one sentence burst. I'm on board with Tom Hanks. 100%.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
I mean,
that's why we've gotten along as long as we have.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why our friendship is never fractured. I mean, I sort of have people like I love Will Smith still.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, there's not everybody needs a backlash.
Right.
So yeah, 100% Tom Hanks.
Especially 100%. Because that's a pretty fitting comparison too. Well, I was gonna say they neither of them has done anything to make them anything less than likable.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing in their track record. Sure, there have been some movies that aren't as lovable as others, but
right.
they haven't ever said anything inflammatory or done anything except for build a brand that is family friendly.
Right.
I was going to say that entirely without reservation until I thought about Will's family and
right.
religious leanings.
Right.
Which mostly are in the background enough that he's still pretty likable.
Yeah, and
I don't know.
Whatever's going on with the Smiths, I feel like they're all, I feel like it's consensual. Like,
yeah,
that's a weird
yeah.
way to put it.
They're
but
having fun.
They're doing their thing. Like,
yeah,
they're doing
yeah.
them.
I don't begrudge
it. And that's fine. But yeah, like, Tom Hanks, he's never proven himself, like, unworthy of his success.
Right.
You know, like, I find him to be very smart, very talented. He seems like a really nice person. And I just don't, I'm like, that's fine. I don't need to fall out of love with that. And I don't need him to be edgy. You know, there's certainly movies that of his that I'll skip because
mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, no, I'm not going to watch like the Mary Poppins movie or whatever it was where he was Walt Disney, but
yes.
he could still,
Mr.
yeah,
Banks.
Mr. Banks. Yeah. Let me know when you get to that one. But if, yeah, if he's in a good movie, I will still, I'll go to it.
So I read an interview recently where he was saying that he would never play a villain just because that's not him. He doesn't see the fun in it, I guess, pretty generally, if I'm going to paraphrase him, which I feel like I have
mm-hmm.
the ability to do at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you see as that's not something that's done by a lot of actors today. A lot of people feel the need to stretch and prove they can do a bunch of different things. He's kind of saying, I've found my role. I'm just going to reprise it in different films set in different places and times.
Yeah. I mean, potentially that's true. And he might not be diversifying. But does he have to? I mean, does he
I don't think so.
Owe us that? And it also seems like at this point, you know, like he does a lot of producing.
Mm-hmm.
He directs. He has all of his space projects. And I kind of feel like, you know, then acting is still a big part of what he does, but it's not as much, it's not 100% of what he does. And so if he just wants to act in a certain type of film when he has the time, then that's fine.
Yeah.
Be like Tom Hanks, be Tom Hanks, you know? And I mean, there's nothing more uncomfortable than when someone like plays against type so intentionally and badly
mm-hmm.
that you can just see the meeting they had in their agent's office where they were like, time to be the villain.
Yeah.
Like, in that thing you do, he's definitely like a shark.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
he's a businessman. He doesn't have a heart of gold. So
he's very suave in The Man with One Red Shoe.
Right. So he might just be saying that he doesn't want to play a serial killer.
Yes.
You know, he has definitely like branched out as far as not always playing Forrest Gump.
Right. He's been in the gray some.
Right. Yeah.
So where does this rank in your Tom Hanks filmography? Is this towards the top, at the top?
I mean, by default, because, oh, wait, no.
There was a flash of serious concern in your eyes.
What did I just say? Well, I was about to commit a grievous error. That Thing You Do is my favorite Tom Hanks movie, both because I love that movie and because it was his baby. He wrote it, he directed it,
mm-hmm.
he starred in it, he cast it. And I love it. And he's even talked about like mistakes he made on that movie, and he hasn't really taken full control of a movie since then, I don't think.
Not that
he's,
full, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's like Tom Hanks distilled. And so You've Got Mail is also one of my very, very favorite movies.
I could tell I watched you mouth along and or speak aloud lines as they happened.
But I would say that like it's like That Thing You Do is one of my favorite movies because of Tom Hanks.
Mm-hmm.
And You've Got Mail is one of my favorite movies and Tom Hanks is in it.
Okay.
If that makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm
he's
gonna...
definitely not the only reason to like this movie.
Right.
Yeah. So this is the third pairing between Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
1990, Joe vs. the Volcano. 93, Sleepless in Seattle. Now 98, You've Got Mail.
Yeah.
They've got chemistry.
They've got legit chem. And this was Tom Hanks' last romantic comedy. This was his retirement from the genre.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah, he has... After this, he's definitely had love interests
right,
in other movies.
Right, but that's not been the point of the film.
But this was the last rom-com from T. Hanks.
In past episodes, when I've talked about the movies with guests, we've talked about there being a very split between comedy Tom Hanks and serious Tom Hanks. But I never really thought about romantic comedy Tom Hanks as being kind of the middle ground between those two halves, because this is definitely not Turner and Hooch.
Mm-hmm.
But neither is it Apollo 13.
Right.
This is kind of the way he transitioned between the two things.
Yeah. And very smartly, made himself popular.
Yes.
With a viewing audience. I've heard Nora Ephron talk about when Tom Hanks got cast in Sleepless in Seattle. He'd been with Meg Ryan before, but not Nora Ephron.
Right.
Nora Ephron wrote Sleepless in Seattle and this movie. And she asked him to be in it. And when he read it, he thought the script and his character in particular was pretty thin. And so he actually requested some changes / rewrites. And then she said also changed a lot during the filming and
yeah.
Added dialogue and also just as a talented actor, brought a lot more depth to the role than had been on the page. And I think of that, and then it's watching this movie as well, even though he's a romantic lead, there's so much there. There's so many scenes of him just writing an email or talking about The Godfather that because it's him, it's a much more interesting scene than if it's just two people being charming on opposite sides of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think romantic comedy Tom Hanks is still a little bit dramatic Tom Hanks and a little bit comedy.
Oh, absolutely.
He brings it all. He brings all the big guns to the rom-com projects.
Another fun fact about this movie, and maybe I'm stretching, but
they're all fun.
Or maybe this isn't as fun as I'm trying to build it up.
Play the fun fact jingle.
Based on a series of plays and movies, all going back. Did you know this?
No.
Yeah. So it goes back to. Oh, I'm gonna find this quickly. Loosely based on a 1937 Hungarian play called Parfumerie by Miklos Laszlo.
Mm-hmm.
Which was then remade as The Shop Around the Corner, the 1940 film, starring Jimmy Stewart in the Tom Hanks role, which and Tom Hanks, I never saw such a close parallel between the two, but it's very obvious when you think about
mm-hmm.
this movie with Jimmy Stewart. It seems pretty seamless.
Yeah. Yeah. Their appeal is very similar.
Yeah, absolutely. Believable as the sort of confident romantic lead, but also their humor comes in kind of bumbling and stuttering.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there were other adaptations of that same play as well, but the 1940 Shop Around the Corner is the key, and that's obviously the name of the bookstore that Meg Ryan runs.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty big influence.
Yeah, and is sort of referenced in the movie because the guy who plays Tom Hanks's grandfather says, oh, that used to be Cecilia's store. We used to write letters. And it's supposedly, as if they were the characters for the 1940s movie.
Yeah, exactly. So that sets up the distance too. We've got Tom Hanks as Joe Fox runs Barnes & Noble, essentially.
Right.
Called Fox Books, looks suspiciously like Barnes & Noble at every instance that it's shown.
Uses the same font.
Yeah. And Meg Ryan runs the shop around the corner, small children's bookstore. And
with a horrible business plan.
With a horrible business plan that should be out of business already, so it's really not the Fox Books Corporation's fault.
Not at all.
Tom Hanks starts off as kind of, he makes finger gun gestures after talking about taking out another small business that's his competition. So he's not necessarily the most likable guy at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
Certainly not unlikable.
Yeah. See, this is one thing I was thinking while I watched it is like, are you supposed to think that Tom Hanks is like leading this soulless existence and he's like a suit because he's also charming from the beginning.
Right.
And like he's adorable with the little kids and he like spends a day with them and he has a nice dog. And he's very like, he's nice to his elevator man. Like you don't necessarily get the character arc that like, He needs to discover love.
Yeah, he's not as desperately, inhuman as you'd expect from this kind of movie.
Right. It seems like it's just the fact that it's his family business. His grandfather and his father started the business, and so he's just like doing what he's good at.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's really not unlikable. Even in the scene at the party where he's being very mean to her. It's not that, I don't know. Like I never hated him.
Yeah.
You can see why she hates him, I guess.
She's kind of forced to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Film sets itself the other equally daunting challenge of trying to make you dislike Parker Posey and Greg Kinnear.
Yeah.
We're both great.
I know.
You see them as like the stumbling blocks in this faded relationship, but I don't know. I don't want them to be unhappy.
Yeah, I want both of them to find love. Parker Posey, I think this was the first movie I saw Parker Posey in,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to be her when I grew up. Like I would watch this movie and be like, I want to be Parker Posey.
I don't blame you.
She's adorable. She's so funny. And
the description that Tom Hanks gives to his friend Dave Chappelle, Patricia makes coffee nervous. I wrote that down because I loved it. That is a very good quality.
Yeah. And it's interesting because like while the bookstore like economics and culture in this movie is pretty inaccurate, the book publishing industry stuff is spot on. And I think Parker Posey is like Nora Ephron's point of view character.
Sure.
Because she seems to have a lot of fun writing these like literary dinner party scenes. And every time Parker Posey is like yapping away in the background while Tom Hanks is like, oh, I'm so lonely and maybe I'm with the wrong person. Like the stuff she's talking about is such accurate publishing shop talk. Like, at one point, she's like, if he thinks I'm going to give him a $600,000 advance when his last book did it, was just like, that's exactly what people talk like in the publishing industry. Like, I feel like she was Nora Ephron's secret joke and that Nora Ephron like loved writing her. And the same with, there's one point where Greg Kinnear, when he meets Tom Hanks, he says, oh, Fox and Sons, the enemy of the midlist novel. I was like, that's very jargony.
Yeah.
Like, that's very accurate and jargony. And so it makes my little heart go a flutter because I love it. But I feel like Nora Ephron was just like winking at all her friends with all of that stuff.
There's also the scene where Greg Kinnear and Parker Posey meet, where she's buttering him up and trying to basically lay groundwork, seemingly, for him to write a book for her,
mm-hmm.
which also seems pretty accurate to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he says, what he says, he's like, yeah, I was thinking of something that might be relevant for our time, like the Luddite movement in 19th century England. And I was like, that's very accurate to this movie as well. Like,
yeah.
It's all very thematic.
And they also Parker Posey and Greg Kinnear have to be pulled apart physically. I really expected the first time I saw this for them to wind up together.
Yeah.
Seems like a missed opportunity.
Yeah, they accept that he is such a Luddite and she's not. But they're both great. They're both wonderful. And then Greg Kinnear stars in one of Nora Ephron's classic breakup scenes. Where the two parties of a long-term relationship have dinner
mm-hmm.
and laugh about how they shouldn't be together.
Just,
and they're
so
just
relieved.
Like, oh my gosh, go get
That's
him.
How all my breakups have gone. let's continue eating dinner. Great.
Let's buy some expensive food and then just like share some camaraderie.
Help you move your multiple typewriters out of my apartment.
When Meg Ryan and Bill Pullman break up in Sleepless in Seattle, they go out to a fancy New York dinner and are just like, and she tells him the story of how she's in love with Tom Hanks over the radio. And he's like, go get him. And in this one, Greg Kinnear and Meg Ryan go out to dinner and they're like, wow, we don't even love each other. And then she's like, you should date that chick. And he's like, yeah. And then they're
totally
just like,
should.
Loving it. Love this breakup.
And so she falls in love over the radio, and the other one, this one over the internet, which is played for laughs. Like, the internet, you're never going to believe it. Fell in love over the internet.
That's true.
Oh, man. Time has not treated that joke well.
Yeah. And it like, they met in a chat room.
Mm-hmm. Over 30s,
which at the time was like a much more tawdry thing
yes.
to do.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, now people legitimately go to the internet to meet people. And they kind of act like they did it accidentally. Like,
or at least they pretended that.
Yeah. We're just in this weird chat room.
If this were remade today, it would be a married man like, I downloaded Grindr accidentally. And just, then it's the love story about them getting together.
Yeah. Maybe you've got swipe. I don't know. I don't know how Tinder works.
I'm going to mail this recording to myself. We need to write this. Also, another thing I wrote down, when she's describing to her employee at the bookstore what caused her to fall in love with him, they talked about books, music, and how much we both love New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just one in a
million. How New York of them
what
to
are
talk
the
about how much they love New York. That's just the most New York thing I've ever heard.
What are the chances? He likes books and movies in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Jackpot.
Not even specifics, but he likes books, he likes music. They love New York City, though.
Yeah. Here's something I want to point out, which has grown to bother me increasingly over the years.
Okay.
At the very end, when Tom Hanks is, well, I don't know, like semi-declaring his love, but before she knows that he's him, whatever, he's talking about their life together. And he said, you know, we would get together and the only thing we would fight about was what movie to rent on a Saturday night. And she says, who would fight about that? And he goes, not us. And she's like, yeah, not us. Even though they had previously in the movie fought about The Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
So number one, you.
Yes.
You will fight
absolutely.
About movies on Saturday night. And yeah.
But
once...
that's kind of the fun, isn't it?
Sure. But once I noticed that, it bothers me increasingly.
You also, like while we were sitting and watching the movie, said you won't have to argue much longer because the business will also be put out.
Right. When he says...
I don't remember. I'm not phrasing the joke as well as it was in the moment. It's pretty perfect, but...
When he says the only thing we'd argue about was what movie to rent on a Saturday night until that industry dies as well.
There you go. Thank you. Thank you for repeating that joke. That's not usually your style, but I appreciate it because it was pretty great.
Starbucks.
Yeah.
They're all about, they're at Starbucks. They talk about Starbucks all the time. Like, they meet up at Starbucks and it's like, okay.
Like Parker Posey's character in Best in Show.
Right.
Maybe that's where they got the inspiration.
But it's funny that they're so like, boo, Fox and Sons.
Yeah.
I'll meet you at Starbucks so we can talk about how much we hate chains.
Some serious product placement in this movie. I mean, it's called You've Got Mail, so there's that.
Right.
It's entirely driven by AOL. Mm-hmm. But also, Starbucks, multiple scenes.
Yeah.
Prominently featured.
Yeah. And the New York City subway.
At one point, an argument is made that you, like, it's the best way to give someone your identity. Like, to sum up yourself is your Starbucks order.
Right.
Granted, Tom Hanks is giving that speech, and he's supposed to be kind of smarmy and like, the corporate guy, but it's never rejected.
Yeah.
She goes to Starbucks and orders something very particular, and that's... Janet, what's your Starbucks order?
Listen, it used to be a tall Americano, but then I saw Robert Durst that on The Jinx. Mm-hmm. Never again.
You think that's like murder fuel?
I'm not going to drink a murderer's coffee. So grande misto. Also, as I pointed out during the movie, Tom Hanks or Meg Ryan orders a tall latte and gets a
caramel grande. Macchiato, I think, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, and gets a grande.
It's a large cup.
Yeah,
times were different.
It is weird, like coffee culture.
I wasn't going to Starbucks in '98. I don't know what the sizes were.
I feel like everybody during the coffee shop boom like had a really complicated Starbucks order, and then like scaled was like, that's ridiculous, actually. Because I actually wrote down, like, when they're at Cafe Lala, Tom Hanks orders a decaf non-fat mochaccino, which is disgusting. Like, there's no way that man is drinking that. Yeah,
so,
that's all I had to say.
Yeah, yeah. There also are, besides them embracing Starbucks, there are multiple montages where businesses are opened up. Mm-hmm. That's used multiple times. I guess this is supposed to be a support of small businesses because they are all small businesses that are opening up. But it just felt very consumerist, which I guess is kind of telling for what the world was like when this movie was made.
Yeah. It seems like they're like, don't you love New York? We've got stores, 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 stores. We've got nut stores, we've got key stores.
Yeah, the nut store,
you made
sure to point that out too, as a foreshadowing of Steve Zahn's line
right.
later.
They show the nut shop opening in the morning, and then later Steve Zahn talks about going to the nut shop where it's fun.
Hopefully that's just next door, not like across town where
which
he has
is
the...
I mean, this is a personality quirk I tried to adopt in high school and college, where I would say, this place is a tomb, I'm going to the nut shop where it's fun.
Really?
And nobody ever knew what I was talking about.
But did they respect that as a thing to say?
And they were just like, is she really going to
they didn't
do
know who to credit to, but they still actually were into it, or what?
No, I think people were just like, bye. Like, where are you going? There's a nut shop. I was like, Steve Zahn from You've Got Mail? Come on. And from that thing you do. Once the joke had fallen flat, I would stay behind to explain it, and then I would leave. I wonder if Tom Hanks got Steve Zahn this job.
That's a good question.
Because he's in that thing you do.
I could not answer that. When we have Tom on the show, we'll have to ask him that. Yeah, I'll make a note that that's one of the things we'll ask.
Question one.
And by we, I mean me.
Right.
Unless you want to be there.
Yeah.
Consider the invitation extended.
I'll come, I'll ask that question, and then I'll leave.
Yeah, Tom, if you're listening, Jana will only be here for a few minutes.
Maybe you should just get Steve Zahn on the show.
You know, I think I can...
And that's more attainable. Yeah. Let's start with Steve.
Steve, if you're listening, we love Tom's number. So two guys in Joe Fox's life I wanted to point out. Dabney Coleman as his father,
mm-hmm.
was the nemesis in The Man with One Red Shoe, So there's a tie-in.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he was the evil CIA operative attempting to overthrow Rory Gilmore's grandfather. They were fighting.
Okay.
So there's that.
Right.
And also Dave Chappelle was pretty great in this movie.
Dave Chappelle. Yeah.
I just wrote down the sentence, Dave Chappelle is a good actor. There's a blind date where they're finally going to meet after exchanging emails for a long time. They don't like each other. They're finally going to meet, and Dave Chappelle Tom Hanks sends him to look into the cafe to see whether she is a monster or not, I guess.
Right, yeah.
Not going on a blind date, so I don't really know that process.
Right.
I don't know what you could possibly in your head be expecting, but I guess, is this a Frankenstein?
Yeah.
No, not a Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And Dave Chappelle totally sells it.
Yeah. Dave Chappelle, and again, it's funny, same with Parker Posey, this is the first time I ever saw Dave Chappelle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all these people that are actually much sort of like offbeat and funny and like this is not their wheelhouse, like this is where I met them. And so when Dave Chappelle became famous, I was like, oh yeah, the guy from You've Got Mail. And it's an interesting choice as like Tom Hanks's best friend.
Mm-hmm. They go to the gym together.
They're like coworkers, but obviously Tom Hanks is the boss.
Yeah.
They go to the gym together. They also walk to blind dates together. But there is one scene where like Tom Hanks and Dave Chappelle are walking around the store before it has opened, and they have this back and forth about, you know, like, oh, they're gonna pick at the big bad chain store, and they're like, Tom Hanks is like, they'll hate us in the beginning, and then Dave Chappelle's like, but we'll get them in the end. And they have this, like, rapport, and they're finishing each other's sentences. But they're supposed to be, like, the oily businessman friends. And I was like, I'm not buying this.
No,
like, I'm not buying
they're fun.
These two as, like, heartless capitalists. Because they just seem like fun guys.
Villain, you don't cast Dave Chappelle.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder why. I don't know. When they were like, Tom Hanks needs a buddy. They're like, how about this black guy who's 15 years younger than him? But that's a weird thing about this movie is that like Tom Hanks's side of the story, his pals are like his dad and grandfather.
Who are both also not that unlikable. Grandfather was already romantic pen pals with the grandmother of the woman that Tom Hanks is going to wind up with.
Right.
And his dad is on his fifth marriage, and we're supposed to be upset about that, I guess, but that's not, I don't know. That's
but
the
Tom
only
Hanks
thing that
isn't,
makes him,
so we're not.
Yeah.
Like, nobody else is upset about it. Him and his dad and his grandfather spend a weird amount of time together for being the top executives of a huge company. They seem to just walk, chat together. I think it's ridiculous that they all like visit the new store so mm-hmm. frequently.
Yeah.
It's like,
I doubt Barnes or Noble went to the one near my house when I was growing up.
Yeah. Just every new store opening. It's like tented before opening, so you can't see what's inside. It's like, no, that wouldn't have happened. But so like Tom Hanks' side of the story, he doesn't have the buddy. Like, it's a little weird. He hangs out with like his dad and grandfather. Some little kids
who are his aunt and brother.
Brother, yeah.
And he calls them the American family. It's pretty charming.
Yeah. I remember in 1998 when Tom Hanks was on the Rosie O'Donnell show, back when Rosie O'Donnell was the Queen of Nice.
Was that an actual nickname, the Queen of Nice?
I think it was, yeah.
Fantastic.
Because she, like, she promoted Broadway shows and she had kids on all the time. It was weird. But Tom Hanks was on there to promote this movie. And the clip that they showed is that clip of him in the bookstore with the little kids. And the girl being like, I'm his aunt. And then the boy being like, I'm his brother. And then Tom Hanks says, we are the American family. And that was the clip they showed. And this is a movie I was really excited about going to see. And then I was like, oh, I hope this movie isn't terrible, actually.
That's a strange choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I guess selling Tom Hanks as likable.
I mean, maybe the kid, like they wanted the kids. I don't know.
Whatever. It is daytime TV.
Yeah, but that's a memory that I have.
But maybe the hardest laugh also came in a scene with those kids at the fair where Tom Hanks does his physical comedy bit about not being able to ring the bell on the carnival game.
Yeah. He's got a lot of talent. It's a thing that like they do with Prince Harry. And because Prince Harry is known as the wild one in the royal family, they show him all the time with kids and animals.
Mm-hmm.
Half of his public appearances, there's either kids or animals. And that's what they do to Tom Hanks in this movie, is they give him a dog that he's crazy about, and then he's always around kids.
Which, fun fact, dog's name is Brinkley. Apparently that was the name of the actual dog actor in Turner and Hooch.
Oh.
I love, as their relationship is starting to escalate via email, while they're also starting to hate each other more and more in reality.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, Meg Ryan is trying to hide the evidence that she's emailing from Greg Kinnear.
Mm-hmm.
And we both laughed at this. Closes the laptop and just throws it a little bit to the side and tries to hide under the blankets and look super chill. Hard to do that when it's hardwired to the phone lines. A lot easier to do today when it's, you get Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Yeah, true. They spend a lot of time in this movie hiding the fact that they're checking their email from their significant other, which seems to not be necessary. Like, the opening scene of the movie, they show first Meg Ryan and then Tom Hanks, like, waiting carefully until their significant other is out of the house to check their email, to the point where Meg Ryan checks to make sure Greg Kinnear is like on the sidewalk and watches him walk away, and then turns on her computer to check her email, which you could just do, you know. I guess they don't want to read it.
Guilty consciences, you know.
They don't want to read it in front of the other person. But it's not that suspicious just being on your computer.
But so those relationships come to a boil later. At which point we find out that we shouldn't like Greg Kinnear because he's got an ego, I guess.
Yeah.
Which, sure, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like Greg Kinnear is less of a villain in the relationship than Parker Posey.
Yes.
Greg Kinnear, they're just like, we're not right for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And because even when they have their beautiful breakup dinner, and they say, like, well, we're not in love with each other. He says, but we're so perfect for each other. She's like, I know. And they kind of laugh.
But they never show the actual breakup between Tom Hanks and Parker Posey.
No.
It's just Parker Posey getting mad that she can't find her Tic Tacs and shouting at somebody because she's trapped in an elevator, which is a stressful situation. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't blame her for being frazzled.
Yeah. And then Tom Hanks moves out that night.
Yes.
So the breakup was fast. He took his dog and an overnight bag. Yeah, that breakup would have been fun to see.
Yeah, I bet it was cut.
I feel like we were really robbed.
Speaking of things we're robbed of, I read that there was an entire set of scenes in which Michael Palin plays a children's author who is supportive of Meg Ryan's store and shows up and reads there and is an extra buddy, I guess.
Uh-huh. That sounds
unnecessary. But it would have been fun to see.
Really fun.
Yeah. I can understand why it was cut. I didn't feel like we were missing any more supporting characters in the Meg Ryan camp.
That's true. Just another person to be like, you're the best.
Mm-hmm.
Your mom would be so proud of you.
That scene where she sees herself and her mom twirling like they used to was kind of weird to add that supernatural kind of feel. They looked ghostly. I know that it wasn't a ghost because she was just looking at a memory, but I was I couldn't help but think, like, this looks like ghosts.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
It's a weird, I think they conveyed pretty well prior to that, that she missed her mom and the place was tied to her memories.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Hard to fault that, though. It was sweet, I guess.
It was sweet. It was Christmas time, so...
Speaking of which, what is that Christmas song that they were singing?
Oh my gosh.
We cut from Tom Hanks' aunt singing Tomorrow about it's that's an orphan song. I don't know why a rich kid like that should be singing an orphan song. That seems appropriative, and I do not like it. But then we go to the shop around the corner, and they're singing the weirdest song I've ever heard.
I should have looked up that song. This is one thing where I feel like those two scenes are meant to illustrate how different they are,
It does not feel
but
very
they're
different.
both weird. Like
Yes.
they both seem unpleasant.
We get Tom Hanks's stepmother grabbing his leg, and that was a weird B plot that really never felt necessary, but
Like
whatever.
the whole family dressed up to watch an 8-year-old girl sing a song. To then this like Meg Ryan once again hanging
And I
out
like that it was an
only
8-year-old girl singing a song decidedly not on key. There were some,
Right.
like, I genuinely liked that. It was not that kind of glitzed up, like, they could have made it that she'd had voice training and she was, some perfect super child, which would fit if we were to believe that they were just, like, we weren't supposed to like them, I guess. The fact that it was kind of off key and she was really, like, having fun and into it felt, again, they're likable.
An American family.
Absolutely. A wealthy American family, but an American
Super
family.
wealthy American family. And then the employees of the bookstore hanging out together in the evening are singing around a piano. And it's the most
About
annoying.
what a clarinet sounds like, and then what a trombone was it, I think.
The
That's Steve, the
horn,
horn that Steve Zahn can't,
clarinet, the horn, and
that
then
Greg Kinnear can't sing, he has trouble with.
They adorably can't remember the tune to the horn section. What's the other one? There's the violin, the clarinet. Violin, clarinet, and horn. They sing the parts individually and then together, and it's all a
I've
disaster.
never done that at a family or work holiday
At a
party.
tiny staff Christmas party.
Because
But then,
it was just the four employees, plus Greg Kinnear and Steve Zahn had his arm around a woman that you don't ever see her besides in profile.
And then like I think that another random extra.
Was there? I didn't see.
Like in front of the window. So it's weird. It's like it's those scenes are maybe supposed to show that they're different but the same, but I was just like, that wasn't necessary.
Right.
I didn't need another scene of Meg Ryan being adorable.
And Tom Hanks is too likable to be mad at.
Do you find Meg Ryan charming?
Yes. Yes, I do. There was no point at this movie where I thought that she was annoying, which I know I've heard people complain about, saying that she's just kind of spacey and obnoxious. But I totally I may I don't I, maybe it's just the heavy emphasis on family in this movie, but I totally bought all of her sentimental connection to the store and to her family and cleaning the so I'm very against handkerchiefs. That's the one thing that I did not find likable. That's gross.
It's real gross.
But then she also at one point when
And then
she's
Tom Hanks
sick,
has a handkerchief at the end.
yes. But when she's sick and he comes to visit her, she goes around the apartment cleaning hundreds, seemingly, of used tissues. Like, what happened to her handkerchief? Was it just like when you have a cold, then all rules are out?
Because you get
I
such
would hope
heavy
so.
volume,
I would hope
like, I feel like
so.
you have to
Because
go.
that's been the problem with handkerchiefs to begin with. It's never that they're not decorative and nice, it's just that they are meant to contain something that you don't want in your pocket all day.
Correct.
So that was the one thing that made me think maybe I'm not on, Meg Ryan's side.
Meg Ryan was huge for me when I was in high school. Like she was my model adult woman. Like I
Really?
wanted to be Meg Ryan.
Really?
And between this movie and French Kiss that she was in with Kevin Kline, like these were my two love stories. And she was in both of them, and she's delightful. I feel like watching them now, I get a little bit more like, wait, what? What are you doing?
Yeah.
And there is a scene where she gets a bowl of, I think cereal, but maybe soup. holds it with a cloth napkin, and goes and sits on the floor in her bedroom and eats it. Like, 2 feet away from a chair, 2 feet away from her bed. So she just sits on the floor next to the wall to eat her soup. And it's like, why?
There's something kind of proto-manic pixie dream girl about this role.
Yeah.
Working at a children's bookstore and flighty and very strong opinions on certain things, but guiding somebody from their, like, stuffed shirt world to some new realizations. That kind of fits.
Yeah, but I think she sells it.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I think that's...
Yeah.
That's her to a T.
Exactly. And it doesn't feel like a costume that she's put on. It just is like, oh, yeah, this is just who Meg Ryan is.
Exactly. And she, I mean, she does a similar thing in Sleepless in Seattle and French Kiss, where she kind of takes this enormous leap. In Sleepless in Seattle, it's like flying across the country to meet this dude that she's never met. And in French Kiss, it's flying to France to chase her fiance who just dumped her. But she makes these sort of like enormous romantic gestures that are very unwise. And yeah, it feels totally normal.
Yeah, absolutely. She's believable no matter what she's doing.
Yeah, maybe she wrought the manic pixie dream girl because she was so good. She was the queen of the rom-com in the 90s.
Yeah.
And then people kept writing parts basically based around that character when she could no longer play them. And so we just kept getting that same girl.
Yeah, kind of fallen away from the spotlight recently.
Yeah.
Too bad.
I know. I miss her. And then
I'd
she had
a comeback. I'd watch
She had movies. A ton of bad plastic surgery.
Did she?
Yes. And she is a person who, like, she got to a point, because, yeah, like, she was my fave. And so then I was like, Meg Ryan forever. And then she started making all these decisions that I didn't agree with. But she definitely did get to a point where she was like, okay, I need to edge it up. Maybe when she thought she was aging out of rom-com. So she made the movie where it was like a boxing movie and she was like a boxer's manager. It was called On the Ropes.
Really?
And then,
this doesn't sound real.
Yeah, and it was like a gritty, gritty drama. And then she had an affair with Russell Crowe and broke up her marriage to Dennis Quaid. And then it was just kind of like huge fall from grace. And she just hasn't been able to make a comeback.
I think it's time though.
I feel I would love to see her in something.
Even like a starring role in a TV drama.
Oh yeah.
I could see that happening.
Yeah.
Let's make this happen.
Let's bring her back.
Yeah.
I'm ready for Meg Ryan 2.0 for sure. Because I was going to say, like, this was Tom Hanks's last romantic comedy and this was Meg Ryan's last well-loved movie. This was our last hit.
Yeah.
So this was, we didn't know we were saying goodbye.
is that a tear in your eye?
But we were. It was the end of an era for all of us.
So at once they've broken up with their significant others, that's the end and they get together immediately, right? Right?
They both know what they want and they go and get it.
Exactly.
They express their feelings to one another.
There's certainly not another 20 minutes. But I guess they got to get back to the, I'm being facetious. They've got to get back to the core of their relationship, which is through email, I guess.
Yeah, or it seems like it's this new, well, there's this moment. It's a very distinct moment where Tom Hanks realizes he's in love with Meg Ryan, even though I think he already knew.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like the moment when you see him decide, because he's on the boat with his dad. They've both just broken up with people.
That, by the way, that's something that Meg Ryan says, oh, you've broken up too? That feels like a very 90s phrase to me. I remember hearing that in a lot of sitcoms and just like, oh, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
You broke up.
Like,
that's such a weird phrasing.
Yeah.
I've never heard that said in real life, but like Friends, sure. I'm sure that was in Friends.
Right. There's a point where she says, everyone is breaking up recently. You broke up, I broke up, somebody else I knew broke. It's like as if everybody is not single. Like, I don't. It's weird.
You're taking issue with the reality of the claim. I'm just bothered by the phrasing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But Tom Hanks is talking to his dad, and his dad was like, "Well, I'm just gonna go meet somebody new." And Tom Hanks says, "Oh yeah, that's the easy part, finding the one single person in the world who fills your heart with joy." And his dad says, Don't be silly, son. I've never been."
Yeah, you think that's what's been the situation with any of like, my, yeah.
"I've never been with, no one's ever been with someone like that. Have you?" And Tom Hanks's eyes flip up and like music plays and it's like, boom, 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 boom.
Is that
boom,
one of
boom,
the like
boom.
Six Somewhere Over the Rainbow
stings? Yeah. And then it leads into him going to her house with flowers. So it's the moment where he decides like, yes, I have, there is a one single person in the world who fills my heart with joy. It's Meg Ryan. And I'm going to win her over. And it seems like he decides that he has to make friends with her as Joe Fox. He has to get her to stop hating him personally before he can reveal that he is her online suitor. Mm-hmm. And so that, yeah. And let's be honest, he's got excellent game.
He brings her daisies.
His,
you remember that?
Yeah.
He remembers Pride and Prejudice. He read it.
Mm-hmm.
He brings it up in context, not just like, oh, hey, I read that book.
Yeah, he makes her tea. He kind of forces himself into her apartment.
That was a little, yeah.
Which is a little weird, but she keeps telling him to leave. And then he's just like, hey, I'm going to put these in flour. And then he just starts making her tea. He calls her honey, like, with unobtrusively.
Yeah, that's pretty cute.
It's so cute. and she doesn't notice, and she just answers. And, yeah, that scene is dynamite. And, like, They are so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're so
from
good.
I mean, as much as I was joking about those 20 minutes coming after which could have easily been like the end of the movie.
Yeah.
The chemistry at that point is ridiculously off the charts.
Yeah. 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 They seem like they belong together in that apartment. And this is something that I noticed at the time that I've never noticed before. Because, yeah, as you said, like she mentions early in the movie that daisies are her favorite flower. And so when he comes to visit her when she's sick, he brings her daisies and he says, "You told me they're your favorite flower." But okay, so when they're talking online and they're gonna meet for the first time, and at this point neither of them know that the other person is the person they know in real life, she has a rose on the table.
Mm-hmm.
In a copy of a book so that he'll recognize her. And then he comes in, doesn't tell her that he's her date. He just comes in as Joe Fox. Anyway, he sits down and they have this fight, and then he starts making fun of her because of the rose. And he's like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And he kind of like plays with it and then hands it back to her. And later when he visits her when she's sick, he does something very similar where he takes a daisy out of the vase, plays it a little bit, like flips it around and then hands it to her. And I feel like it's this parallel of like when they first, like their first stab at the relationship was this secret pen pal thing.
Yeah.
And then like with
it was the
meeting
wrong flower.
It was the wrong flower.
Yeah.
And so then he rebuilds the relationship as a daisy relationship, and that's what works.
Oh man.
And then they like start as friends.
I just got chills.
Yeah, I really believe this now.
This is fantastic. Nora and Delia, you've done it.
Yeah, they had to like recast it. Like he like brought it back down, found the common ground, and then they start over. And they're, yeah. Listen, you can watch You've Got Mail 1,000 times and see
new
things every time.
Like, I noticed that when they're at the farmer's market, she's eating an apple and he's eating pretzels. Like, that's how different they are, but they're still getting along now.
Right. There's a lot of flowers in this movie. They're frequently at the flower market.
Mm-hmm.
She says they're going to be the book district, like the flower district. Lots of flowers.
Yes.
Flowers all over the place.
Yes.
All over town. And then they make out in front of flowers at the end.
Yeah. With Somewhere Over the Rainbow, just like in Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah.
Pretty great.
Yeah.
So that's that brings us to the end of the movie. this edition of the end of the movie, because I've got this now. I'm going to watch this how many more times just to see what else I find. We should just do a weekly episode checking in. What did we find this week?
How do you feel about them, though? Like, so they get together at the end. Like, mm-hmm. he shows up, mm-hmm. and then she's like, oh, it's you.
I wanted it to be you so badly. We don't really get that indication.
And then...
So when he at first asks, right before they're going to meet up, when he reveals that it's been him, he basically tells her, I'm in love with you, and she does this thing where she, like, can't put her hand someplace which was pretty adorable. I found it totally charming.
That's why she makes the big bucks.
Yes. Not in the script, I bet. That was just an acting decision.
Yeah.
But so I get the impression that she's not disgusted by the idea of him being in love with her, but she kind of feels like she's got to go figure this thing out first.
Right.
But I also don't get the impression that she wanted it to be him so badly, and like that seems kind of not the case.
Yeah. Yeah, they seem to be having
that a great... That would imply that she has an idea that it was him.
Yeah.
I guess.
They seem to be having a great time together, but you don't get the impression that she's like head over heels in love with them and wishes that she didn't have this internet date, which is weird. But I just think the end of the movie is very pat. And then once they make out for a while, and then she's going to be like, so wait.
What do I do for a living?
How long?
I guess, well, she said she's got like a book. She's writing a book and...
Right.
So she's got something to do. That was my main concern. She's out of a job.
Yeah. She's had lots of job offers or whatever. But she's going to be like, so wait, how long have you known it was me? And he's going to say, a couple of months.
Yeah. Yeah.
Since Cafe Lola.
I've been talking to you in person and a separate correspondence under a different presumed identity at the
same
time.
I've been... wingmanning myself for some time now. I just feel like they're about to have a lot of long conversations.
I would hope so.
But
that chemistry might be such that I think
they're gonna make it.
This is it.
They're gonna make it.
We don't need to talk about the insanity of what just happened.
Yeah.
Let's just
move
on.
Number one, he's living on his boat. So he needs a place to live. She needs
She's
a job.
She's got a place to live. Greg Kinnear moved out.
Yeah, that's one of the throwaway lines in the movie that I think is ridiculous, is when she says, I could never be with a man who has a boat. I'm like, what have you got against rich men?
Or mariners.
Or just like people who enjoy the sea. Like, why not?
There's no explanation of that whatsoever. What is it about the boat?
No, I mean, they just needed something in that dialogue.
You seem to be into a guy with a boat after you saw the interior of Fox 2.
Fox 2.
Joe's dad's boat.
It's full bar. Yeah. Yeah. The ending's a little funny to me, but they're going to make it. But I think it's funny that, like, especially now that so many people date online and, like, you know, it's such a crapshoot and we all know that. Like, mm-hmm. that she's hanging out with Joe Fox all the time. And then he tells her that he's in love with her and he wished he'd asked her out. And she knows that she likes him in her heart, but she's like, I have to go. I'm going to be late for this date. It's like, if you have a human person in front of you that you know to not...
This is the a bird in the hand.
Yeah. You know to not be a crazy person, to know, you know, that they're good looking and you like them. You're not going to be like, no, I've got to meet this internet stranger.
Who blew me off once.
Yeah. Like that, I feel like that would not happen. It's like score. Like, I would love to not meet someone on the internet. Thank you. Let's definitely go out. Like, it's weird. It's a little weird.
I guess you're just not as romantic as Meg
Ryan
is. I'm not.
One thing that happens a lot in this movie that you had to get high caliber actors for is you watch Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan composing emails.
Yes.
There's a lot of
Yes.
it.
A lot of voiceover.
And they have to make it entertaining to watch. So there's a lot of head wiggling. They
And Tom
do,
Hanks doing Marlon Brando impressions.
right. Meg Ryan is usually sort of like talking out loud while she's typing. And then they sort of like respond to each other's, like when they get an email and Meg Ryan's like, "How cute is that?" And it was just like, it's, they're both good. They're good at what they do because they had to do that for the purpose of a movie about writing emails, and it could have been so
It could have
annoying.
been a disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're just charming as all get out, these two.
I'd buy another movie with them in it.
Yeah.
You've still got mail.
You still got mail.
They have not, they base their relationship on AOL. They're never giving up those AOL email
That would
addresses.
be amazing. I wonder how many people tried to get like Shop Girl or NY152 as
Did they ever reveal why it was
different.
152?
It's his address.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that was implied, but I didn't.
Yeah, there is a point where they show him walking out of his apartment
Okay.
building and you
Okay.
see it on the canopy. It's 152 Riverside Drive. And they do, like, he walks out under the canopy right as I think he says NY152, or
Gotcha.
maybe you see it
I missed
on,
it.
you see it on her screen and then he walks out. I mean, I didn't catch it the first few dozen times that I've seen it, but they do show it because then later when they're trying to guess what 152 means and she says, "Oh, his address. No, he would never do anything
And
that
he makes the face
prosaic,"
and
but he did. It was his address.
And why is she Shop Girl? No, okay. Oh, sorry. I didn't watch the movie.
She's a big fan of that Steve Martin book and then movie
She
starring Claire Danes.
saw into the future.
Yeah,
Big Jason Schwartzman
she
fan.
dreams of having an affair with Steve Martin.
Who doesn't?
That movie made me want to barf. I hope you're not. I'm like, no,
Well,
sorry, sorry, Steve Martin, no.
you won't get invited back for the Steve Martin podcast then, I guess.
Oh, here's another thing that I thought was funny is when Parker Posey's talking about offering Meg Ryan a job as a children's book editor, and Tom Hanks goes, "I don't see her working for you." And she says, "Why not?" And he goes, "She lacks the killer instinct, which is something you need as a children's book editor."
I presume so. Whoever got that Harry Potter contract had to murder someone to get it, I think. Closing this out, gonna bring back a favorite feature. It's
Okay.
the IMDb question of the day.
Okay.
So, I scrolled through the message boards on IMDb for You've Got Mail, looking for somebody with a poignant question about this movie. I'm gonna see if you can top the answer that it got from the fine fellows over at the IMDb warehouse.
Great.
Okay, so the title of this question is just Kathleen's dad, question mark. I always wonder where he is. She never mentions him. I wonder if Birdie and Kathleen's mother were, quote, special friends. So that's I guess the question. It's not really phrased as one, but that's so do you have a take on this?
Interesting. I, well, Birdie, we know that Birdie had an affair with a man in Spain. But then again, Kathleen's mom obviously had a kid, so it's, I guess it's possible. That's, wow. I've never thought of that. I bet he, I don't know, I bet he was like, I bet her dad was just like a businessman who thought they were adorable and bankrolled the bookstore that wouldn't have made any money. I because I did wonder while watching the movie why Tom Hanks like doesn't have a mom. Like there's so much about his dad and grandfather. And at one point the dad mentions like, "Oh, well, I lived on this boat after your mom." But yeah, they're both uniparented.
Well, funny you mentioned that. One of the people on the board says maybe it's Joe's grandfather. Disgusting that I thought of that. Which, you know,
It could be.
It could be. And somebody says, you have a point. He did say they had a date, but he couldn't really remember what they actually did together. He could have legitimately forgotten or just pretended to forget so he could keep an affair hidden. I don't think that's what this movie is implying, but I can see where you're tracing those lines. Somebody else just wrote, he's probably locked up at Rikers Island. Don't know where that was implied. But,
sure.
But I think that's less feasible of a theory.
Maybe he's on a boat. And that's why she could never be with a man who owns a boat.
Yeah.
Maybe
he sailed away from their family. Oh my God. That is definitely on the cutting room
that's
floor.
That's why she hates boats.
Yes, 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 yes. We didn't see it. And there was no Fox One that we saw.
No.
Maybe the boat thing and the Joe's grandpa thing are... They could be tied into the same conspiracy theory.
I mean, that would make her his aunt.
Yes. He's got a strange relationship with his other aunt, so.
It's true.
All right. I think that'll do it. Thanks for coming by and doing this podcast with me, Janet.
My pleasure.
When does the book report come out?
The book report comes out every other Friday. At youtube.com/bookreportshow or at themillions.com.
And could you give a quick rundown of what the show is for the unfortunate few who aren't already following?
Yes, the Book Report is a literary talk show hosted by myself and Mike Schaub, who is a book critic for NPR.
Really funny guy.
Very funny guy, very smart. He reviews books for NPR, New York Times, and the LA Times. And it's just us talking about books that we've read mostly, and we sometimes have guests. You can also find me in the pages of Men's Journal writing about ribeye steak.
Is that true?
Yes.
We'll have to talk about that later. Because I want to know more, but don't want to give Men's Journal too much airtime.
Yeah,
they're not sponsors. I could send them an email, see if they're interested in sponsoring.
Yeah,
but
I'm sure.
Also, great follow, twitter.com/sojanetpotter. One of my favorite Twitterers.
Thank you.
Give a shout out to the composer of our theme song that you heard at the beginning of the show, Hot Dad. It's always fun to say, always fun to see guest reactions. You can follow him at hotdad.bandcamp.com and dotflist on YouTube, dotflist. Got some really great alternate reality TV theme songs on there. Lots of funny things in addition to his other music as Hot Dad. So go check that out. You can follow us at HanksCast, HANKSCAST on Twitter or HanksCast@gmail.com. If you could go over to Facebook and like the Hanks for the Memories page, had some help setting that up from Alex Young. Thanks, Alex. You're a great guy. Also, thanks to Kat Blackard, as always, for the artwork. And also, if you could subscribe and give a 5-star review on iTunes, we would love that. And as always, we means me, because for some reason I can't stop saying we when I mean I. Something's wrong with my brain. Someone help me. We would love to see you back here next week at Hanks for the Memories. Thanks. We is me.
This has been a consequence of sound production. Have a nice day.